Welcome to Highly Questionable. It's what, Tuesday? We got Sarah Spain, Mike Golic Jr. I'm Katie Nolan. If I were Bomani Jones, I'd make fun of your shirt, Mike, but I don't get it. So let's do a show.
Did Jameis separate himself from Taysom Hill last night?
All right. The last time Jameis Winston started a football game, because there was no preseason last year, you'll remember, was in 2019. And that was the season that I had him as my fantasy quarterback, where he threw, 30-something touchdowns and 30 interceptions. It was a season where he could have a 5-touchdown game on my bench, and then I would start him, and then he would have a game with 5 pick-sixes. It was an up-and-down season all over the place, and it's the memory that remains in a lot of people's minds for Jameis Winston, and that is how we arrive at the question, did he separate himself from Taysom Hill last night? Jameis Winston had a fantastic game last night. He threw 2 beautiful touchdowns that both went more than 40 yards in the air, which the Saints haven't seen since, 2016 from one of their quarterbacks? It was certainly promising. Taysom Hill is a guy that has been used at multiple positions. He's used in interesting formations. You could throw a sneaky little quarterback out there. He's a running back or he's a receiver. He does a lot of things. And it seems like if Jameis is going to be consistent at quarterback, the ideal for the Saints would be, okay, name him the starter and then continue to use Taysom in those interesting special packages. And then they still have 2 backup quarterbacks that could be just true backup quarterbacks on their bench. But there seems to be this connection to wanting Taysom Hill to be the guy. I don't know if it's just that Sean Payton kind of talked a big game and now he's like, I have to prove it. I have to prove it, because if I go with Jameis and I could have gone with Taysom Hill, then I'm going to feel like I don't know what it is, but I kind of think it's adorable and I appreciate it. Either way, a great game from Jameis last night.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, Katie. It's that Sean Payton has been clinging to his promise that Taysom Hill is a starting quarterback and deserves starting quarterback money. And yet, at every turn, he ends up being the same Taysom Hill, interesting, quirky guy that you put in various situations while you have someone else play the real quarterback position. This seemed inevitable. The difference, of course, between the Jameis that we saw last night and that 2019 season where you pointed out not just 30 interceptions, but 35 turnovers total, but 5,000 yards, right? So what we saw last night was against the Jaguars team that was 1-15 last year, is in the first season with a brand new NFL head coach, and it was the preseason. Now, I'm not trying to dog anything that Jameis did. He absolutely separated himself, but that's because the competition is Taysom Hill. We can't get super excited about this, because what we need to see from Jameis is continuous good decision-making. Again, this is a 5,000-yard quarterback. Those deep balls are going to be there. Those big plays are going to be there. He's going to hit on some things that are going to make you go wow and ooh and ah, and then start him in your fantasy league. And then in another game, he's going to make those boneheaded plays. Has that been changed in a meaningful way between being with the Bucs and getting to the Saints? We need a whole lot more to know that. But we've seen enough to know that he's going to be more than Taysom Hill at the regular starting quarterback position. Sean Payton's just playing with us now, not announcing it.
Yeah, no, and I enjoyed surly Sean Payton having to defend this over and over. He's like the rest of us, sick of talking about all these quarterbacks. We did it leading up to the draft. We're doing it now in the lead up to the NFL's regular season. So I can understand where he's coming from on this. But to Katie's point, the reaction had to be like in semi-pro when they threw the first alley-oop and everyone's looking around like, can you do that? Like, oh, yes, you can throw the ball downfield again. And that's quite frankly a variable New Orleans going to need early in this season, because we know Michael Thomas is not going to be out there. Like, that offseason surgery that also chapped Sean Payton that happened later than he would have liked is going to keep the best player on their team off the field for an extended period. And so what are you going to need in the meantime? You're going to need Marquez Callaway to be the reason people believe you can go past 20 yards in the field. That's going to open things up for Alvin Kamara. That's going to allow one of the best offensive lines in football to do their thing. And the defense that's got Marcus Davenport starting to look like the guy that they drafted. So if you can just have this other thing that defenses have to account for from the Saints offense, it can make up for some of the mistakes that are inevitably going to be part of this Jameis Winston on-field transition into being the Saints starting quarterback.
Golic, I'm curious to know how you felt about the Jaguars offensive line.
Sad, in a word. Like, it made me very worried for Trevor Lawrence in a lot of ways. It will, like, this is the unsexy answer. It'll get better. Brandon Leonard's going to come back. Andrew Norwell's been out, arguably their two best offensive linemen. But it still makes me very, very worried that, listen, the number one pick in the draft could end up on a team that could ruin him for the rest of his career.
Can the Big Ten, Pac-12, and ACC be a formidable opponent for the SEC?
I mean, so ever since Oklahoma and Texas left the Big 12 to go to the SEC, and the SEC is growing into this big, powerful, of the already powerful five, we got to rename Power Five because this doesn't mean anything anymore, but of that, what used to be, and I guess technically still currently is, it's growing and getting bigger. And so, according to reports, the Big 10, ACC, and Pac-12 have decided, hey, strength in numbers, allegedly, and will be announcing a partnership of some sort to give them power in whatever forms that could mean, voting, financial, in this new outlook for college football. And it's going to be interesting because their schedules will change in a way that could actually make it more difficult for them to get to the college football playoff. But also about the college football playoff, that's something that we've also heard is going to have changes coming up soon. And I imagine that joining powers together creates, I don't know, more power in a situation where you can start to feel like the power is only in the hands of one group. Media rights also play an interesting part in this conversation, one that I'm not necessarily sure how to tiptoe around, so I'm going to leave that to the two of you. It basically seems something we've been saying over the last few months, the landscape of college football is a changing, and now we just have to see how this all shakes out.
Yeah, so what this is about is having to do something, right? Texas and Oklahoma made an announcement with the SEC that a lot of people seem genuinely caught off guard by. And so what happens when people in positions of power feel slighted? They get together and say, we've got to do something so that we look strong while this is going on here. Everybody knows the SEC has been the power players on the block right here. And so that doesn't change much in all of this. The interesting part is going to come is, what does this tangibly mean? We still haven't heard that. People talk about scheduling. Well, I can only hope that you're willing to embrace what went on last year, where we figured out, hey, BYU and Coastal Carolina can draw up a game in the dirt on a week's notice here. Because if this is about scheduling games 10 years off between the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, I'm sorry, save it. That's not going to do much for you. Katie brought up the media rights aspect of this year. That's probably what this is truly about here. Delaying playoff expansion, because all of these leagues have different television partners who I'd imagine want to be a little bit more involved in whatever this looks like in the playoff going forward here. We know right now ESPN is the one that puts on the college football playoff. And so there's going to be elements of that to come into play here. But to Katie's point, all of this is about circling the wagons and figuring out, what do we do right now? Because if this was about legitimately the structure of the current proposed playoff expansion, that structure benefits the people outside of the club right now far more than it benefits the SEC. They can stand pat from a competitive standpoint and be good here. The biggest thing I worry about is what we saw last summer, because this sounds good right now, but you're going up against Greg Sankey, who's been doing this for the better part of two decades, with three conference commissioners who are all brand new. Kevin Warren at the Big Ten is the most tenured conference commissioner of this purported alliance. And what did we see last summer? Sticking together sounds like a good idea until something else pops up that you're not ready for here. We saw when college football had to go and get tough, the tough got going last year. Kevin Warren and the Big Ten were the first one to cancel the season. And I'm not even saying that I blame them for where their heart was in that decision. But what I'm saying is sticking together sounds great. But right now, we have not seen it done in a tenable way in college football. And I can't trust that that's something, a foundation, that I can necessarily say is going to be able to swing too much. So this is like-minded people academically and a lot of other ways getting together to do we don't know what yet in a tangible way.
Right. Yeah, and that's the big part of it. We know there's going to be an alliance, and we know it was essentially necessary. There's a real humbling that has to take place here from each of these different partners to say, we can't go up against the SEC on our own. And as much as we don't want to admit to any of that, we have to collectively join forces to have any sort of power. To Katie's point, we call it the Big Five, but it should probably be more like a box in one, right? There's the four, and then there's the one that gets all the attention, and they're clearly the star and the best, and you better focus most on them. So the box in one has been disrupted enough by Texas and Oklahoma, by the changing face of the NCAA. And you look, to your point, Mike, to last year, how weak the NCAA was. We knew that about them. But when push came to shove, they essentially sat back and said, do whatever you want. And guess what? Guess who knows how to do whatever they want best? Greg Sankey and the SEC, particularly when they have the best TV partners and the most control over everything. So while we're going to spend a lot of time talking about scheduling because it's sexy, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about college football playoff because it's sexy. We like talking about the games and the matchups of the football. Behind the scenes is probably where this is most important, the governance side of things. Why they are aligning is so that they have the number of heads of things together, schools, athletic departments, et cetera, that can try to collectively form enough of a strength if they align with each other to counteract what we already know is the powerhouse of the SEC. Like I said, we're on top of the stuff out front. Behind the scenes, they're playing long game of what the future of NCAA football looks like if they let the SEC continue to be in power as much as they have. We don't know what it's going to look like yet, but they're going to try at least. And if I were them, I think this is sort of necessary.
Can I ask a stupid question that we might not know the answer to? Oh, this is pretty dumb.
Only stupid people.
This is pretty dumb, and I bet somebody on the internet will point that out to me. What happens to the Big 12?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Sometimes, Katie, when a dog gets very old, we send it to a farm.
Upstate?
It gets to live its final years somewhere beautiful. Nice.
With other dogs, right?
Up next on HQ.
Oh, my goodness. This is the cutest thing I've ever seen. Oh, no, he went the opposite way.
Oh, no.
Oh, honey, no. Look at the coach. Look at the coach keeping up with him. Go the other way. Oh, if he does it. If he does it, though.
How many yards is he going to pick up on this?
Are these, like, Leatherheads helmets?
Look at Blaze. Look at Blaze.
Time to play the game that's faster than most, but not all nine-year-olds. Do you question?
You give us topics and events and we question them. I believe that to be true.
Do you question if Kirk Cousins should accept Everson Griffin's apology?
Everson Griffin, defensive end. He's back with the Vikings, played there for 10 years, left, went somewhere else, came back, is there now. Here's what he tweeted last season. At Vikings, Kirk Cousins is ass, thank you. Ask Zimmer if he wanted Kirk, ? He will tell you the truth. Who wanted Kirk Cousins? Take your guess. It doesn't really leave a lot of room for nuance there at Vikings. Well, like I said, he's back with the Vikings. And here's how he feels about being back with Kirk Cousins.
I haven't really talked to him yet, but I'm going to get around to doing that. You know, apologize to him. You know, apologize to, you know, Coach Zim and Rick. About what I said, you know, I take full ownership in that. I'm just going to talk to, you know, Kurt and apologize to him, and we're going to have a man-to-man conversation, and we're going to leave it like that.
Real quick, did he just say Kurt that last time? Because I swear he said
Ooh,
Kurt,
maybe.
And he was doing it on purpose.
Ooh, so you're of the mind that he's still salty? It's entirely possible that he is still salty. I just hope when he does finally talk to Kirk Cousins, he keeps the same energy. Just be like, hey, it's sorry that I think you're bad, but you can prove me wrong this season, but so far I think you're pretty bad. But I have a funny feeling that's not how that conversation's gonna go. It's probably gonna be a lot of like, hey, I'm sorry, and like, yeah, it's okay, because you're too embarrassed to look somebody in the eye who has told the world they think you're bad.
Katie, I think the conversation's probably gonna go as you expected. The conversation's gonna be something like, listen, man, it was just real tough. Like, I was leaving, I wasn't sure what was gonna happen next, and like, I took it out on you. And meanwhile, there's really no way to explain that. That's mm-hmm. I think it's pretty clear.
Well, and like, listen, this is the Warrior sport, so I can say this. When you look like Everson Griffin size, do you really need to explain it to Kirk Cousins? Kirk is going to take this apology in whatever form it sounds like, and he's going to live with it. Because I'll tell you a story. The first NFL games I had seen since I was a kid was in 2011. Kyle Rudolph, my roommate, was up there for his rookie year, and I went up that season and watched them play. And I saw Everson Griffin, who is a 6'4", like 270-pound DN, be the first guy down on the kickoff coverage team, Ooh. Level the guy in the wedge, and Ooh. Make the tackle. And that was when I realized I probably wasn't going to play NFL football because people like him lived there. So the guy that can do that can say whatever he wants to Kirk, and Kirk is going to wander back over to the offensive side of the room, and he's going to sit there and play quarterback for the team and like it.
Do you question if Blaze the Great's younger brother deserves praise for this run?
Okay, if you are new here, you may not know, but Blaze the Great is kind of a celebrity here. We've been showing clips of this kid since he was 6 years old. He's now nine.
Dang.
He's very fast and a child. Woo. Those are two facts about Blaze the Great that are kind of covered in his name, I guess, except the child part.
Yeah.
But real fast, real smooth.
Oh my
he claims
God.
To be the fastest nine-year-old.
That
That's
form.
His claim to fame. Yeah, he is.
Look
I mean, just...
He got proof.
Leaving him in the dust. But right. Now we have a clip where you'll see Blaze the Great is playing as quarterback and his younger brother is the running back.
Oh.
Oh my goodness, this is the cutest thing I've ever seen. Oh no, he went the opposite
way.
Oh
no.
Oh honey, no. Look at the coach. Look at the coach keeping up with him. Go the other way. Oh, if he does it. If he does it, though.
How many yards is he going to pick up on this?
Are these like Leatherhead's helmets?
Look at Blaze. Look at Blaze. A path for him.
Oh, my God. He's going to do it.
Do you guys want to know his name?
I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
He goes by Wrong Way.
Oh, my God.
No!
Stop it.
Oh, my God.
Like the song by Fastball? Wait, is that fat? No, it's Sublime. That's Sublime, isn't it?
I was like, deep cut, Katie.
What's the fastball anyway, song
Katie?
Called?
All-Star?
No,
no,
what?
That's Smash Mouth.
Stop
Mouth.
It!
You
stop!
Moron. Time to play the game that knows that I now hate the Yankees more than Katie does.
Mm.
See? Oh, no.
That's a big no for me. You tell us what's on television tonight. We tell you if we're intrigued or not. I promise, Sarah. I don't think it's possible.
Continuing today on ESPN, the Little League World Series.
Okay, so we're going to talk about kids just a little bit longer. This kid, Gavin Weir, has been described as, I don't know, a young Chris Sale or a young Danny Almonte, I guess. He's 12. He's thrown 572 pitches in the Little League World Series.
Oh, man, that's a stroke.
And that's him at bat. He's thrown 572 pitches and given up one hit. And then this is him batting. My goodness. God, he's tall. Look at that swing.
Look at that wingspan.
That's the swing my dad used to always yell at me to have. And I was like, well, that doesn't, no one can do that. And then that kid's out here like, yeah, no, it looks effortless and powerful at the exact same time. So I believe we're being asked if we're intrigued. So yes, I'm intrigued. Golic Jr., what about you?
I am very intrigued here. And listen, if we're searching for comps for miniature athletes here, and this is a destructive pitcher and an effortless hitter here, then I am apt to dub him the Shohei Ohtani of the Little League World Series, because that sort of length and follow through on the swing was vintage Shohei, which I would know because I've seen him hit that swing 40 times this year as he leads the major leagues.
Sarah, are you intrigued?
I am intrigued, and I see where you were going there, Mike. Unfortunately, the Shohei comparison doesn't quite fit as well, because it turns out after the game, Gavin was actually cutting up jerseys with scissors. So the Chris Sale thing is just spot on.
Oh, my God. What a
the
deep
heart wants what it wants.
Real shame.
Tonight at 7:20 p.m. Eastern, Yankees and Braves.
That's going to be a big ol' no for me. I don't like watching the Yankees as plucky underdogs. It's not something I enjoy. But we are going to look at a clip that has absolutely no baseball in it. It features the Freeze, who's a local, well, there's setup. He's a guy that you can challenge to race at Braves games. And he gives the challenger a head start and chases them
Billy
down.
Gill?
My God, is he dressed like he's a... he looks like he's a fencer.
Oh, no. Right.
Was that the finish line right there?
End. Why at the end? Oh,
that's he did that on purpose.
Was there a wire there?
No, that's on
sniper
purpose.
Sniper in the bell tower.
There is a sniper
you can't make
in the
your
building.
Ankle do, you can't make your ankle do that on purpose.
That was a fix. The fix is in. Golic, are you intrigued?
I am very intrigued here. I mean, listen, obviously falling down when trying to do something athletic is kind of my forte here. I just wish we could see some of the highlights of the Yankees. I mean, 10 straight here. That Anthony Rizzo guy here, just incredible to
Sarah,
watch.
Sarah, are you intrigued?
A place that
you
really
know
him.
You know what? You know what I'm intrigued by? You know what Mike Golic Jr. just said something about trying to be athletic and falling down? Does anyone remember when there was a competition to come to Chicago and try to kick a field goal? And this guy right here came in basically full uniform and talked about how he was a former football player and he was going to show everybody, and then couldn't even touch the ball barely with his foot. Does anyone remember that? Let's talk about that.
I do
Anthony Rizzo.
I do remember that. I just remember my kick also didn't cost the team a playoff game. So
oh, my God. Oh, my God. Stop it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how Tom Brady's not in New England anymore.
Oh, why are we doing that? What am I going to pray for? All right, that's it for Highly Questionable. If you want more of these two, you're in luck because they're back-to-back on ESPN Radio from, 4 to 7, you can get Chiné and Golic. And then from 7 to 9, you can get Spain and Fitz. If you want more me, well, that's too bad. I'm going to have to – I'll just see you next time I'm on here, which is Thursday.
Sports. It has a question mark.
And it starts with a question.
It does. Thank you.